Chodesh Tov, Chodesh Tammuz, Tafshin Pei, and last day of Sivan, actually. And we are up to, today's daf is daf Kuf Chet, we're up to Kuf Zayin Omud Beit, and I'd like to start again with Omar Mar Bahamduri, Omar Shmuel, just to get back into the sugya. So we've been talking about various types of Netilat Neshama. The last thing that we had before this was the din of a dog and taking out a fish from water. At what point it would be considered to be murder, so to speak, Netilat Neshama of the fish. And today, Bar Hamduri Omar Shmuel talks about inserting a hand into the uterus of a mammal and disconnecting the embryo from its life systems, then he would be chayiv. Now, it's not quite clear over here whether the embryo actually died or the embryo was delivered. Because of that. If the embryo died, then you would think that the issue over here would be Netilat Neshama, and of course there are, in fact, many Rishonim who say that there must be a Chiyuv of Netilat Neshama, and that the discussion that we're about to have over here about the equivalent of Ketzira is just to learn that even this type of thing would be Netilat Neshama, by way more of a Moshel. That's a little bit difficult, but there are many Rishonim who stick to that, even though it leads them into a lot of trouble in the sugya that's coming. Other Rishonim taina that the embryo did not die, or certainly did not necessarily have to die, and that the issue over here is why is the actual disconnection of the embryo itself considered to be a Chilul Shabbos? And that we get on today, my taina. Omar Rava Bar Hamduri Azbarali. It was explained to me by Bar Hamduri. Lav Amar of Sheshes Haimat, the Tolosh Keshuta Mihizmi Vihigi, Michayev Mishumo Kerdavar Migidulo. Is it not true that if somebody takes, now, the problem is that the way that we usually translate Keshuta is hops. Now, the thing is that hops are an actual plant that grows from the ground. And what we're referring to over here in the Gemara is clearly a fungus of some type, and not what we call hops that we put into beer and so on. Now, they do make beer out of fungus, and as a matter of fact, it's very excellent beer out of fungus. I'm not talking about the normal yeasts, obviously, in the beer, but I'm talking about actually building the main body of the beer on fungus, and it's becoming more and more popular, actually. But this thing that we're calling over here keshuta is clearly a fungus. And it's talking about something that grows along the branches of thorn bushes, but it itself does not have roots that connect it to the ground. Now, it says over there that if you would detach this keshuta from the thorn bush, then you would be chayev because of oker davar migidulo, which is a tolda of kotzer. And hachinami, so then this should be true over here also, the disconnection of the place where something is growing, even though it's not a plant, but it's an animal, doesn't matter. It would be the same thing. A fungus isn't a plant either. So that means that any type of life form of any of the kingdoms that would be taken off of its place of normal growth would be considered to be a tolda of kotzer, according to this way of understanding it. As I said, there are other Rishonim who don't believe that kotzer applies to anything but plant life. And because of that, they hold that the real chiyuv over here is because of Netilat Neshama. And we want to understand why that disconnection is ipso facto called Netilat Neshama, and so on. Omar Abaye, in light of this idea of the concept of disconnection being an actual ketzira, fungus does not have to grow on bushes, obviously. It can grow on the underside of your garbage pail. Or it can grow on a pitcher that you keep in your house. You haven't dried properly, and now it's got fungus on the all around the wall of the pitcher. If you disconnect the pitra, pitra is a fungus, often used for a mushroom, meuna de chatzpa, from the handle of a pitcher, you're chayev mishum oker davar migidulo, even though it wasn't attached to the ground at all, because this is where it is growing. Asks Rav Hoshaya, how can you possibly say this? We learned in the Mishnah before that if you take out a plant from a pot that has a hole in it, so then you're chayev. But if you take it out of a pot that does not have a hole in it, then you would be putter. But I understand, why would you be putter? I mean, it's certainly not less than a fungus growing on the handle of a pitcher. That's crazy. So obviously we do not say that things that are growing wherever they are growing are considered to be akira and a tolda of ktsira. Answers the Gemara, that doesn't prove a darn thing. Because over there, the normal way for that flower to be growing or that spice to be growing is in the ground. And therefore, when now you pluck it out of a pot of some kind, that is not the norm. But the fungus that's growing around your pitcher, that absolutely is the norm. And therefore, you can't bring a raya from hatam lav hainu revite. That's not the normal growth. Ocha hainu revite. Okay. Now, the next thing that we discussed in the Mishnah, we talked about the Shemona Shrotzim and the question of whether there would be a din of Tzeda and a din of Chovel on Shemona Shrotzim. And that was a function of the type of skin or hide that they had. And we said that in order to be chayev on Chabalah, you would need to have a hide, not just a membranous skin. So now the question is, the Mishnah continues on to talk about Chaya the oath. Now the idea is, okay, I understand a chaya, obviously. Let's get a little bit into the idea of the skin of birds. Now the skin of birds is obviously considered to be a skin when it comes to the issue of wounding, yes. But interesting question is, can you write and make tefillin out of bird skin? That's a very interesting question. Kotvin tefillin, here it says you're allowed to write your tefillin on the skin. I should actually use the word hide because we've been using skin as a membranous skin, on the real skin of a bird. Omer of Yosef, well, obviously, what's the chiddush? Is the chiddush that that skin is actually hide and therefore usable for writing on and making tefillin out of? That's the Mishnah. The Mishnah says if you make a bruise on a bird, you would be chayev. And we've already learned yesterday, the only way that you're chayev for bruising is if something has a real hide. Omele Abaye, oh man, it tells us an awful lot. What do you mean, what does it tell us? If I just would have known the Mishnah, would I have known that I'm allowed to use bird skin for writing on as parchment? I mean, look, consider that a bird's skin is full of holes because of feathers. Now, I would have thought that you certainly keep it to eat be nikve nikve. It's got all these holes. You're not allowed to write tefillin on it because, after all, doesn't it say, uchtavten? We had before uchtavtam, rather, amezuzot betecha. From there we learn, kitiva tama. It has to be complete. Kitiva can't have any kind of break in a letter, holes in a letter. So how could I possibly use a bird skin for writing on? Therefore, Ravuna is coming to tell us this tremendous chiddush, that it is kosher. And why indeed is it kosher? Because remember that in Eretz Yisrael, they taught, Kiri Amri B'ma Rava, that any hole in a parchment, that the dio, which is, remember, thick, so the viscosity of the ink does not allow it to penetrate that hole. And in fact, it just stays on the surface of the hole. You might have thought that that's not called writing because that part is not written on the actual skin. It's sort of just standing supported by surface tension. So maybe that's not called writing. Kamash malan, that is not even considered to be a hole. That is the skin. Enoneka. And because of that, Rav Huna is saying, and therefore, now that we know that, I want to tell you that I can add to the Mishnah, not only is it considered to be functionally a hide in terms of parchment, it's also considered to be kosher to write on. Motiv Rebbe Zera. The Torah says when it comes, here it says in a braita like this, the Torah says when it comes to the oila, remember that you're supposed to be v'shisa oto bichnafav. You're supposed to tear the oilas ha'ov, leaving the feathers on the skin when you tear it, and you put it that way onto the Mizbeach. Now, what that implies is that the Torah is being machshir et ha'or. In other words, even though there's a halacha when it comes to an ola, which is called hefshed, and that's one of the dinim of the korban, is that you must take off the skin. Over here it says that you put the feathers with the skin onto the Mizbeach. And if you are correct, you're claiming that as a din of skin, why is it not included in the mitzvah of hefshed on all olot? See, why would the Torah be telling us to put it on the Mizbeach? I don't understand. You can ask that question to the boss if you want, but it certainly doesn't prove anything. It could be skin, whatever it is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, put it on. What do you care? Rachman Arabia. What are you assuming that hefshet of a mammal means by definition that you're going to have to do hefshet on the bird? And the Torah says, no, it doesn't mean that. So you like your explanation better. I prefer HaKadosh Baruch Hu's explanation. Thank you. But it doesn't prove anything to me. Ikini, I mean, actually, others say that the whole discussion that we just had really wasn't like that at all. It was the exact opposite. The Rebbe Zeira, instead of when we're talking about a question that he was asking, was trying to bring it as a raya. Because Rebbe Zeira says, look, you see clearly that this is true and that it's considered to be a real skin that you can write on and so on, because it says in the Braita that the Torah says, Bichnafa. And from there, we learn that you put the skin onto the Mizbeach. Now, I ask you, if that skin did not have the din of a hide, then why do I need a pasuk? If you're going to tell me that that skin is not just a membrane, but it's real hide. So, yeah, Rabbi Shlomo Aruch, that explains why I need a pasuk to tell me, listen, I told you, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I told you to take off the skin hefshet of mammals, and that's hide. And now you're looking at this bird and you're thinking to yourself, I better take off this hide before I put the bird on the Mizbeach. Therefore, I need to tell you that no, you have to put it on the Mizbeach anyway. And according to this version, Rabbi Zeira took all of this into consideration. But if you're going to tell me it wouldn't even have a din of hide, so then why do I need a pasuk to tell? Why would I think not to include it? I mean, it's part of the edible portions of the bird. It doesn't have a din of hefshet, so then obviously put it onto the Mizbeach. What's the chiddush? It's a therefore, Meitzich Krol Rabuye, that proves that if I need the pasuk, it must be that indeed the bird's skin is called real hide and therefore has a din of or for all dinim, even the gabbik tefillin. Amar Abaye, look, it's a nice try, but I don't think it's a proof. Because, I mean, I could, not that I disagree. I certainly agree with you that it certainly does have a din of or, but I don't think that you could bring a raya from this braita, because the Olam Emelech Olav Oru, I could have told you it's not considered to be real hide. Maybe it's more of a membrane. And look, I mean, the fact is people do eat it. And Itzrich, I still would need a pasuk to tell me that you put it onto the Mizbeach simply because Sarkatai Techamina came into Eat Bay Pirtsi Pirtsi. Look, it's not a very pretty skin after. I mean, it's full of these holes from the feathers. So maybe it's mice. I mean, maybe it's just inappropriate. It's not. It's really a little bit disgusting. And to put that up on the Mizbeach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I might think was not really appropriate. You know, sort of hakriveu na lepechatecha. I mean, you wouldn't give that to the governor, would you? I mean, you'd make it a nice piece of schnitzel, but you certainly wouldn't put the skin off of the holes of the feather. You wouldn't put it up in front of him. Kamash v'lan. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to teach us that. No, he wants this on the Mizbeach, and indeed, as Rashi brings over there, even though it really is repulsive, right? It's disgusting to have these feathers and so on, but it's the derech of an ani to be bringing these things, and because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, anything that an ani brings is chaviv to me. I don't care if you find it repulsive. Now that we've said this, I'm really curious. Can I write tefillin on the skin of the big fish? So what about that? So, is it mutter lichtov tefillin al gabi or shel dag tahor? He asked Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. So Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak said, you know, those kind of questions, I'll tell you what, why don't we wait for Eliyahu HaNavi to come around? You know, when he announces Mashiach, we can ask him, what's the din of the big fish? Taim yavo Eliyahu. What do you mean, says Gemara? It's none of Eliyahu's business. Taim yavo Eliyahu. Eliyahu doesn't have any rights to tell us Halacha. I mean, what's the issue over here? You can't use your brains? This is Teresh Baal Peh. You're supposed to use your brains. I mean, what are you asking Eliyahu? Are you asking him, is the big fish's skin true or? Is that what you want to know? Ilei me deitle or deletle or? Use your eyes, for God's sake. You're telling me that whale skin is not skin? Come on. A chazina deitle or? Of course it has skin. I don't really mean whale, of course, because it would have to be kosher. V'od, furthermore, it says, Beferish, as we know in our favorite Shabbos Kalim into relationships. It says, Beferish in the Mishnah Kalim, of all crazy things, that Atzamot HaDag V'Oro Matzilin Ba'olamet. So that if you would make it Samit Patil over a Klicheres using the oar of a fish, then it would prevent the tumah from coming in. But if the oar of a fish is considered to be a membrane, then it would have the din of Eichlin, and then it would not be able to be Chaitzitz Bifnei HaTumah, because then anything that's Makabel Tumah is not Chaitzitz Bifnei HaTumah. So how could it be part of a Tzamit Patil? So you see very clearly, I don't need Elio, thank you very much. So what is Reb Nachman saying? Ella, no, he wanted to know like this. He said, listen, there is something that is really not quite clean. It's like there's a smelliness that's associated with fish. Okay, some type of this has to do with some type of real spiritual zuama, which we're not able necessarily to detect, but whatever the pashtus is, as the Rambam says, if Eliyahu will say that this type of thing is appropriate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's really the zuama was paskamine, because that's already the type of thing that you need to know whether it's mekubal b'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu or lot paska zuama mine. That's not something that we can so easily determine. Now, Shmuel and Karna were once standing on the bank of the Malka River, and Chazina Lamaya de Kodalu Vachire, the water was a perfectly quiet day. There was no wind. And for some reason, the water is churning and it's jumping and it's very full of waves. It's full of mud and it looks very, very turbid and it's going nuts. Amalei Shmuel Lekana, look, there's got to be a reason for this. I would suggest, this is not Rashi's, I would suggest that the reason is that you remember somebody ran in today and said that there was a great man that came from Eretz Yisrael, and I have no idea who it is, but apparently that great man is suffering from some type of serious stomach ailment. And what's going around over here is that the water is coming up to greet him. And either it looks all churning like this because of the fact that it's feeling empathy for this pain of this great man. Or Rashi says maybe what it's doing is, since he needs to be going to the bathroom all the time on the side of the boat, that's very not sanua, so the water is jumping up to cover him and so on. Tosfos says, this is a little weird. that's not the pshat. Please mute. The pshat is that actually that Shmuel understood that there's a person that's coming. And the weather was terrible. The water was all churned up. And he's going to have no choice but to be drinking from that water. And that water, Shmuel, as a doctor, knew was going to be causing serious stomach problems. And he wanted to save this great man because Shmuel was a doctor. And he knew what to do about these stomach problems. So he sends Karna. And he says to him, Zil toile akankane. Then that's Rabbi Yochanan's gears, but he has to take out the words of Kadolu Mayalak Bule Apekame. He takes out the words like Bule Apemine. Instead, he just has it that the great man is going to be drinking from this water, and that's going to affect his stomach very badly, etc. So he says to Karna, look, go and sniff him out. Sniffing him out means see whether he's really a Talmud Chacham. And this is a great man. I don't know. Maybe he's very rich, whatever. Find out if he's a Talmud Chacham. I have no idea about Rav. Anyway, so Karna goes out and he finds Rav there we didn't know. So he starts asking him questions to see whether he knows anything. So So Rav said to him, how do we know? In answer to your question, how do we know you can only write on skin that's from a kosher animal? Because it says, Laman tieh Torat Hashem beficha. You have to have the Torah Hashem in your mouth. And this is referring to writing the tefillin and so on, which means it has to be from something that you could actually put into your mouth. Mina mutar papicha. How do we know, said Kana, how do we know? We always assume that dam that makes a woman tameh has to be red. Because the Mishnah, remember, in Nida that we all learned together, discusses colorations that may be part of what appears to be a menstrual cycle, but actually doesn't have it in a dam, and it's not metameh. And how do we know it has to be red? So Rav said to him, the remez is from Vayir'u Mo'av, Mineged et Hamayim, Adumim Kadam. So we see that the Torah is utilizing the word dam as definitive of what would be called, like really red. Minayim le'milash about Tomakom. Now the Torah never said what exactly you're supposed to do for a Brit Milah, which is perfect for this morning for me. We wouldn't want to cut off the baby's ears, right? So how do we know that we're supposed to be doing Milah on genitals? Does it say anything about that? Says Rav, well, take a look what it says about the Zachar that you have to take off Orlato, Bisar Orlato, and it says by fruit trees, it says over there, Varaltem et Orlato, exactly the same word. So that Gzera Shava teaches us where you're supposed to be cutting. Because just like by the fruit tree, we're talking about making sure that the fruit is something that is Orla. So the same thing is true over here. It's got to be fruit. And the only thing which is fruity when it comes to human being is genitals, because that's what creates fruits, which is exactly the fruit tree. And so it's talking about the part of a human body that would be the equivalent of a fruit tree. Ema says, Karna, well, I mean, you find the word orlat mentioned about a heart. Maybe it's supposed to be a heart operation. It's a good thing my son-in-law is a heart surgeon. Dichtiv, that would be quite a brit. Orlat levavchem. So maybe it means some kind of heart operation, or maybe it means cut off the baby's ears, or part of the ears, because it says arela oznam. Says Rav, look, one of these has a full word, orlato, is what it says, orlato by bizarre, orlato by human, and araltemet orlato, the full word which includes the actual pronoun in the word. So that's an orlato tama. It's a complete match, right? So orlato tama from orlato tama, you don't learn out the word orlato, which includes the pronoun, from an orla that does not include the pronoun, and that would be arela oznam, and so on, orlat levavam. I mean, I'm talking about orlato being a match. At that point, Rav realized that this guy is a chutzpanyak, and that he's asking him questions to see whether he knows answers, and he's not asking him questions to actually get answers. And boy, was he angry. So he says to Karna, what's your name, buddy? And Karna says to him, my name is Karna. Yeah? Well, I hope you get a nice horn coming right out of your eyes. So, Yerava, the typically Karna Be'ene. Nonsense. Anyway, actually, that did happen to him, unfortunately, the Gemara says elsewhere. So, the Sof Eile Shmuel Abeitet. In the end, Shmuel takes Rav in when he hears such Talmud Chacham, and he doesn't tell him that he is about to put him through hell in order to cure him. And what he does is he gives him exactly the type of things that are going to totally destroy his stomach and thereby force evacuation of everything that he had had on that boat that was causing him to get serious stomach problems. So he gives him ochlin amadasari. He gives him this bread that's made out of barley, and he gives him a kasa de harsana. It's absolutely the most awful thing to give someone like that, fish brine, you know, with a bunch of sardines and God knows what else mixed with like flour and spices, and then he gives him a bunch of beer to drink, as of course was done in Bavel, and this was like catastrophic for poor Rav. And I mean, Rav was just dying to please get me to a bathroom on time, and he refused to show him where the bathroom was, and because he really wanted Rav to be totally churned up to the point where he was going to lose everything. And so lo achlilei beit hakisei. He wanted him to become very diuretic. So Rav cursed him too. And he said, Manda Mitzaron, whoever's giving me hell like this, Lo Lukmin Leboni should not have any children, any sons that survive him. Unfortunately, that's what happened to Shmuel. He only had daughters that survived him. So don't start up with Rav, basically. Anyway, so the question, one of the things we talked about before, just getting back to what Rav said, how do we in fact know where to do a brit milah? That's actually a machlokes tanoi. Minayin lemilah shibotu makom, nemar kan orlato, v'nemar lahalan orlato. Ma lahalan davar she'oseh pri. So we're talking about fruiting bodies. So too, in a human, it's a davar she'oseh pri. Divrei Rabbi Yoshia. So obviously it has to be the part of the body that is the reproductive organ. Rabbi Natan Omer, you don't need a Gzeira Shava, for heaven's sakes. And when the Torah discusses a brit milah, it always identifies it as being something to do with a male. Arel Zachar, asher lo yimolet b'sar latona. Why does it stress Arel Zachar? Because the point is that we're talking about the place where it makes a difference if you're a male or a female. So makom shenikar ben zachrut u'nakvut. So the pasuk actually is merames itself to its being genital. Tana rabbanan. So getting back now to the question of ktivat tefillin. Kotvin tefillin agabi or behima tohora. Now, you'll notice that these issues, by the way, are very interrelated, even halacha lemaisa, because of the question of, do you wear your tefillin at a brit milah, or is the oath of the milah means that you should not be putting on tefillin, but you can keep them on while you're wearing tefillin. So milah, tefillin, and guess what else? Shabbos. Go hand in hand in terms of the dinim of Ot and all of the halachas, which is why we're going to have an awful lot of discussion of not only Ketivah, but the actual dinim of Tefillah and the whole parak of Rabbi Eliezer de Mila, of course. So you can write your tefillin on the skin of a behema tahora or the skin of a chaya tahora. And when we say tahora, it doesn't mean it has to be kosher to eat. It has to be a species that's kosher, but the particular actual phenotype may not be. I mean, it could be that it's a nevela, it could be it's a trefa, that doesn't matter, but as long as it's the right species. And then you've got to wrap the parshas of the tefillin. You've got to be nichrachot b'saran. You take a little bit of hair from a kosher animal, and you use that hair to tie the parshiot of the tefillin before inserting them. And then you have to sew the tefillin shut. Let's say to you're closing up the tefillin, you're putting in the stitches. You have to use the gidim, the sinews from kosher animals. And this halacha l'moshe miSinai that you have to be korech the tefillin in kosher hair, and you have to be tofer with the gidim. And that's this. The first halach was a halach l'moshe miSinai that we learned out from the pasuk about l'man tiator Hashem b'picha. But these things we know from halach l'moshe miSinai. Aval ein kotvim lo agabi or behemah tmeah, velo agabi or chaya tmeah, and certainly not on an avela or a trefa of a non-kosher animal, and certainly you cannot use the sa'ar or the gidim of non-kosher species. And actually, this was a question that someone who was a baitusi, remember baitusi were the talmidim of baitos, the tzedukim were the talmidim of tzodik. Tzodik and baitos were both talmidim of Antignos Ishsocho, which is why it was such a disaster that he makes a point of it in the Mishnah to be very careful how you teach your Talmidim, because if they don't understand you, they can go off with Tarbut Ra'ah, which is what happened to them after they heard the halakha that you're supposed to be like Avodim Rav Shamshimis or Rav Shalom and not the Kabo Pras. They took that to mean that there's no schar for mitzvahs and so on. So anyway, a Baitusi, which is the same thing as saying a Tzeduki, asked Rabbi Yoshua HaGarsi, which is interesting because this is Yoshua that's called the Garsi on the partial level. Garsi is called either because he was a Goretz, meaning he would grind grains, or he was called a Goretz because he came from the town of Garsi, of Goretz, or he was called a Garsi because he was the one that was Goretz all the Mishnayos, which is exactly the one that the Baitusim would detest because they're Karoi instead of Garsoi. So anyway, so they asked him, how do you know that in kotvin tefillin agabe or beima tmeah? So he told them the pasuk. It says l'man tiyatarat Hashem b'picha. It has to be something that is allowed to be eaten. So then the guy asks him, so then if that's the case, then how are you allowed to use nevelot v'trefot? You're not allowed to eat that. And Rabbi Yoshua said, you know, I'll tell you a little fable. You know, you'll understand. Imagine two people. There's two people that were determined by the government that they're going to be executed. Now, one of them, the king himself, came and executed. And the other one was thrown into death row, and, you know, the espaklitor took care of him. So who do you think is more choshev? Ezebeyem Mishubach. The most choshev one, obviously, is the one that the melech himself had to deal with, right? So what do you think would be more choshev? Something that is shechted or something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shechted, right? I mean, the veil of a treifa, God took care of them, so that's more chashev. So if you're telling me that I'm allowed to use ve'emes that are shechutos to write my tefillin on, koshikein, I'm allowed to use nevelas v'treifas. What an argument. But wait till you see how he kills him with it. So the guy says, what? That's crazy. So then how come we don't eat it? Then we should be able to eat nevelas and treifas. I mean, by your moral logic, Amalei, Rabbi Yoshua says, oh, wait a minute. Who's talking about? You're the guy who believes in moral logic. The only thing that you believe counters your sensitivities is something that the Lord himself has clearly stated in the holy book, right? Okay, what kind of question is that? The holy book says, lo tochlu kol nevela, and you're asking me, but by that logic and morality, you should be allowed to, but that's the whole point of your life, right? Says the Baitusi, phew, Kilos, you got me, man, on that one. Okay, I give up. So anyway, that was the end of that argument. And now we are ready for our Capitan.
No.
Okay, we're about to hit another one of these absolutely wild Mishnayos where Rebbe does his perfect best to get us totally confused about what it might mean, and it's completely opaque. So let's see what the Mishnah says. Okay, you're not allowed to make hilmi on Shabbos. Now, hilmi, the last anybody heard, is basically salt water. So it's like you call it brine, you know, it's the type of thing that you would use to make pickles, okay? So you're not allowed to make hilmi on Shabbos, okay? But you can make salt water. That's supposed to mean. And you can dip your bread into that, and you can put it into your cooking. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says, now, I don't understand. What's the difference whether it's a lot of hilmi or a little bit of hilmi? I mean, alohi hilmi ben meruba ben muad? And yeah. First of all, who said there's a difference between a lot and a little? What is he talking about? And then he says, and what's the difference? Okay, so there's no difference. So what are you saying? That it is kosher? It's not kosher. It's mutter. It's not mutter. He's not even saying what he means. I'll tell you what kind of salt water you're allowed to make. You can put a little bit of oil into your water or a little bit of oil into your salt, and then you can mix the water and the salt. Why? Because that messes up the mixture. And therefore, it's not going to be a good type of salt water, but to actually take salt water, that is part of the process of tanning or kivush of vegetables. Now, if you are kovesh vegetable, the Rambam understands the entire sugya to be nogea, not whether it looks like part of the process of tanning, because ain ibud ba'ochlin, but because kivush, which is pickling, has the same din as cooking because it's food preparation, even though it doesn't use heat. But we've seen in many places, and we talked about this in terms of kashrus and chulin in Avodah Zarah, that if it's maluach, it has din of mevushal. So therefore, according to the Rambam, the entire discussion over here is whether the preparation of heavy-duty salt water is part of the pickling process, and therefore the Rabbanan asana just looks like you're going out to do pickling. So our first question that the Gemara wants to know is, what does the Tana mean when he says hilmi versus me melach? Because as far as I know, brine and salt water are synonyms. So my karma, what's he talking about? Omri v'yodom Shmuel, halki karma. Basically what he's saying is, you can't make a lot of salt water because that is what people call brine, which is going to be used for pickling and so on. But you can make a little bit of bay melach if you want to just make a little bit of salt water in order to dip things in. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says, no, it's the same thing. What's the difference? It's basically brine. Since when do we make a distinction in a malacha between making a lot of it or making a little of it? I mean, malachas are defined qualitatively. They're not defined quantitatively. So this doesn't make any sense. Okay, fine. But so what are you saying? They're both good or they're both no good? I mean, you're not being very explanatory here. Ivailo, Rabbi Yossi, Esor Lahatir, like what's he trying to say? Amar of Yehuda, he must be coming to say that it's exactly the same and it's mutter, because if you're ready to allow people to make a little bit of salt water, why can't they make a lot of salt water? Because, look, otherwise it should just say, for Rabbi Yossi, oser. I mean, the Tanakhama said, but you're allowed to make a little bit of salt water. So it should say, and Rabbi Yossi, oser. You're not allowed to make a little bit. I mean, if he's saying a whole new statement, then what is the difference between this and this? So then he's coming to talk about the entire Mishnah, right? So he's saying, no matter how much you make, it's all the same and it's mutter. Omale Rabba, no, that's not true. That can't be true, Rav Yehuda. I'm sorry, look at the end of the Mishnah. The Mishnah explains, Rav Yossi says, what am I matir? So Rav Yossi says, I'll tell you what you can make. You can make me melach hamutarim only by adding a little bit of oil to the salt before you mix it, or by adding oil to the water before it's mixed, which means that Rav Yossi actually is talking about things being usher, and he's coming to tell you the only case that I can tell you that's mutter is where you're making it by ruining the mixture. You know what this is like? This is like trying to mix. This is very nogel halachas. We'll discuss in a moment. But this would be like trying to mix. We just tried doing this on Shabbos, mixing a little bit of health additives to a drink in order to add electrolytes to the drink, right? And what happened is that the mixture got a little bit wet before it was put into the soda water, and it would not dissolve. This is basically what will happen to the salt if you get it mixed with oil before you put the water on it, or even if you put oil into the water, it does not allow the salt to mix properly, and it makes it less powerful as a pickling agent. So that is what Rav Yossi was matir, but that means normal cases, even if it's just a little bit, according to Rav Yossi, it would be usher. And the truth is, Rav Yochanan also said, no. Rav Yossi is ushering, and actually Rav Yossi spells it out to us in a braita. Tanya Amiachi, I'll prove it to you. Einosin me melach merubin, you're not allowed to make a lot of salt water to put inside of your pickle jar. Now, pickle jars, they usually use broken kalim, for pickle jars. It's a, you know, it's a great use for it, and they just fill up with salt water. So you can't use that. But take the tocha kvashim to use it for pickling inside of a gistera. But you can make a little bit of meimelach, and you can add that to either your tavshel, or you could dip your bread with it. Rabbi Yossi says, who ever heard of such a thing? Ridiculous. Who ever show me in Shabbos where it's the amount of what you're doing that makes it mutter or usher? I mean, I understand that there's a shear in terms of a chiyuv, but not what defines the nature of an halacha. So because this is a lot and this is a little, that makes something usher and the other one becomes mutter? So now people will come to the conclusion that a malacha is only usher if it does a lot. But if it does a little, then it's mutter lechatchila. Who ever heard of such a thing? The truth is, and here Rabbi Yossi tells us openly what he holds, elu ve'elu asurinein, it's all usur. And the only thing that would be mutter, elu ein me'melach mutarim, noten shemen u'melach, or shemen u'mayim, you have to first mix the oil into the salt or into the water, and don't first make the water and the salt mixed, and then add the oil. No good. Okay. So, now, Tony Rav Yehuda Bar Chaviva, you can't make really strong meimelach. Now, this obviously not going to Rabbi Yossi, you can't make any meimelach. So, you can't make strong meimelach. What is strong meimelach? Rabbi Rav Yossi Bar Abba de Amr Tarvayu, if you can float an egg in that water, then it's got too much salt in it. And how much would that be? I mean, you know, I don't necessarily have an egg handy, so could you give me an amount? Yeah, Om Rabbi, it's 2/3 salt to 1/3 water. Why would anybody make that? It's awfully salty. Om Rabbi Abu Lumuraisa, you make that in order to make a pickled fish. That is very, very, so afterwards you have to wash it off to get that out. Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chaviva, Ein Mochin Tznonu Beitza B'Shabbat, you're not allowed to salt radish. You're not allowed to salt your egg on Shabbos. Rav Chizkiya Mishmei Dabaya Amar, no, you are allowed to salt a radish. Not allowed to salt a radish, but you are allowed to salt an egg because an egg is not normally preserved with salt and it doesn't do it that much good. It's just flavoring. Om Rav Nachman, look, I got to tell you, in the old days before I became a Baal Tshuva, I actually used to salt radishes. Oy vavoy, Oily. But then I heard, because I figured, I mean, look, you know, if I'm salting the radish, I'm taking away its sharpness and I'm basically ruining it. So afsudikum, and that's not called being kovesh something on Shabbos. And the reason I thought that was because Shmuel was the one who said that a pugla, churpe male, the sharper a radish is, the more it is useful for your health. But then when Ula came from Eretz Yisrael, he said that in Eretz Yisrael, they would make piles and piles of radishes and they would salt them. So, not on Shabbos, but rather that's the way that they would eat radish. And that shows that it's actually useful to salt radishes. So then I decided, oh my God, so then that means I can't do that on Shabbos. So then, I don't sprinkle my salt on the radish, but I do dip them in salt as they're coming into my mouth. So I wouldn't have like a couple of radishes or radish pieces and salt them. Now, from here, the Mishnah Berurah says that this shows that you are not allowed to make salad on Shabbos, unless, he says, what people do is very often I've seen people make salad. He uses the word salad, salatin, he writes in Yiddish. So, nowadays there's this new minhag, he says, where people cut up vegetables and they make what they call salatin. So I guess once upon a time, nobody made salatin, you just ate your veggies. But anyway, so what they do is they cut up these veggies and they salt them and then they mix them together and then they put in vinegar. He describes all this, the Mishnah Berurah. And then you put in vinegar and oil. He doesn't say how much pepper or anything else, so you can't really go to him for the recipe. But he says that is totally usur. Because, I mean, maybe you could be melamed zchus that people do this because since they pour on the vinegar and the oil right away, so they think that it's mutter, but it isn't really mutter. So what you need to do first is you need to cut up your veggies. You need to put in the oil and or the vinegar in order that afterwards, when you salt them and you add other things, you will be doing it the way that we're matured over here by being machlish the salt. But otherwise, what you would be doing would be essentially the kivush of vegetables. Not that it would be actually the kivush, that would be b'chai of you. But as we say here, the rabbanan asur lechatchila. And therefore, the same thing is true. You're making salt water. You were talking about, let's say, dipping on Lel Pesach. You have to be careful that it is not too salty because we asked it over here, making me melach as part of the kivush process. Tani Rabbi Yerabar Chaviva, an esrog, a radish, and an egg. So, etrog, tznonu, beitzah, they are so difficult to digest. They have a tendency to just sit there in place. And if it wouldn't be for the fact that, whew, it's a good thing they have that outer piece. So we use the word klipatan, but we don't really mean klipatan because by the egg, we're referring to the white of the egg, which is not the klipa of the egg. But if it wouldn't be that they were surrounded by something that prevents them from linking up with other things in your stomach, whew, you'd never get them out of your intestines. Let me tell you. And then yotzi I am lo olam, obviously a little bit of an exaggeration, but what we're saying is that they tend to be difficult for you to get rid of. Kiyasa Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came to Babel, he said, I can tell you in my trips around Eretz Yisrael, nobody ever drowned in the Dead Sea. So, you can't sink in that sea. Rav Yosef, God turns Sodom upside down, and Rav Dimi is just as upside down as that is. Man, oh man, what do you mean no human ever sunk? What do you mean? And a piece of wood did sink? I mean, you said things don't sink. So, I mean, what was he trying to say? I'm like, well, obviously he was saying not only would a piece of wood, which doesn't sink anywhere, not sink there, but even a human who sinks elsewhere would not sink in the Dead Sea. And what's his point? I mean, who needs to know that? Lamai nafkamina. Ah, the nafkamina is kiyada ravi. Ravin was once walking behind Rabbi Yirmiah, and they were walking right along the Yam HaMelach. And he asked Rabbi Yirmiah, would I be allowed to wash myself with this water on Shabbos, because remember that medicine is prohibited on Shabbos because of the gezeira that the Chachamim made, mishum shechikat samamanim. So don't allow us to do medical things. So people do come from all over the world just to wash up in the Yam HaMelach. So, I mean, if I'm trying to wash, is that like right away seen as being osek in medication on Shabbos or not? On Marley, so he said to him to wash, you're allowed to, because over here, people could think that you're just washing. I mean, remember that anything that people do that they would do, even if they don't need medication, we had before many examples, that the Chachamim did not answer that because of Shrikat Samamanim. So yes, you could definitely wash with it. But people think your hands are dirty or whatever. Or Marley Shapra Dami. So the Ravin said, okay, how about if I put them over my face and then I open my eyes wide to allow the water in and to clear an infection? Could I do that, to open them and close them? Or Marley, look, I can't tell you that I have a Kabbalah about that, but I do know the din, because I can show you that in any case where people will look at the thing and say, wow, that guy is being osik in medical things, and nobody in his right mind would be letting that horribly stinging water into his eyes on purpose, unless there's a very important reason for it, which would have to be medical. So I heard a case like that, because Rabbi Zera said, now, it wasn't clear when he said it over. Sometimes he said it over in the name of Reb Matzna. Sometimes he said it over in the name of Mar Ukva. I mean, apparently he had learned it from both of his rabbanim. But he quoted both of them, both Reb Matzna and Mar Ukva. He said them in the name of Avuah d'Shmuel and in the name of Levi. But they didn't know who said which. But either Avuah d'Shmuel or Levi said one of, each one said one of the following, namely, that you're allowed, when it comes to putting wine inside your eye on Shabbos, so that you're using the alcohol in the wine in order to clear up an eye infection, you are not allowed to do that. Al gabeya ayin, but to wash with wine, you are allowed to, because people would actually do that if you're not opening or closing your eyes to get the wine into it. And the other mimer, again, either said by Levi or said by Avuah d'Shmuel, the other mimer was that rok tafel afilu agabe ha'ayin asur. To use rok tafel, remember rok tafel is saliva from someone who has not had anything to eat from the morning. Now remember, in the nowadays where we've got all types of antibiotics and antiseptics, it seems a little ridiculous for us to use saliva. However, it happens to be that the one of the most potent antimicrobials is saliva. And the more powerful the saliva is, that hasn't been diluted by anything else, the more antiseptic properties it has. So therefore, they used to actually use saliva as an antibacterial agent. And they, because of that, nobody's going to think that you're washing your eyes in disgusting saliva, I guarantee you. So, and therefore, if you're putting rok tafel, even to put it on the eye would be usher, because it's clearly medicinal. And therefore, the issue over here would be exactly the same. To put the water from the Dead Sea into your eye, woo, anybody's going to say, this guy's got a problem in his eye. Anyway, you don't know who said what, right? I think we can identify the authors of both of these statements, okay? It must be Avuah d'Shmuel, who was the one who said that you're not allowed to put wine in your eye, but you could put wine on your eye, because Shmuel, who was the son of Avuah d'Shmuel, and undoubtedly influenced by his father's teachings, so he said you're allowed to soak your bread in wine on Shabbos, and you can put that soaked bread on your eye. So where did Shmuel get that from? Must have heard it from his father. So the Shmiel Miman, love the Shmiel Miavuah. I mean, he doesn't quote anybody on it, so therefore it would be because he understands that people will assume that he's bringing the halachas from his father. Says the Gemara, excuse me, but then there's another thing that Shmuel also said, you know, So Hadi Amar Shmuel Rok Tafel Afilu Agave Ayin Aser. Shmuel also said you can't put this strong saliva even on your eye. You'd say the same thing. Who did he hear that from? He must have heard that from his father. So then that would mean that both things were said by Shmuel, not by Levi. And one of them had to have been said by Levi. So you're not going to define which one if we know that Shmuel said both of them. And therefore, Chadash Mi'alei Mi'avua, the Chadash Mi'alei Mi'Levi. So one of them, he must have himself learned from Levi, which is why we were quoting Levi, so we're still stuck. Lo Yadina, we have no idea, and that's why they wouldn't say who said what. Lo Yadina, Hai Mi'avua, and Hai Mi'Levi. Omar Marukva, Omar Shmuel, you're actually allowed to soak Kilurian, Mi'erev Shabbat, V'notin Agabei Nav B'Shabbat, V'ino Choshesh. So Kilurian was a mixture of different types of herbs and things like that that were mixed in either water or wine and used for an eye problem. This was called, this is the Latin calorium. And it's not a problem if you prepared it before Shabbos, since you were mechuyev to prepare it before Shabbos, nobody is going to think that it's mutter. Because of that, they're not going to confuse it with medications that you would actually prepare on Shabbos. So that's not a problem. Bar Levi was once standing in front of Mar Ukva, and he sees him using calorium on Shabbos. And he's mayitz of potach, he's opening his eye wide, and he's exactly what we said you're not allowed to do if people will think that you're using something which is medicinal. So he said to him, Mar Ukva said to him, wait a minute. Shmuel said you can wash your eye with it on Shabbos. He said you could put it on your eye. He never would have been mad to you to do all of that stuff, which makes it very clear that anybody who's looking at you sees that you're doing something medically to your eye. Kule hai vadai lo shara mar Shmuel. Mar Shmuel never was mad to that. Rabbi Yannai sent a message to Mar Ukva. Could you please send us, remember that Shmuel was a famous doctor, and Shmuel had the calorium that he would make. Everybody had a particular way of making up calorium, and Mar Shmuel's was assumed to be extremely effective because he was the greatest doctor in the world. So they asked Mar Ukva, who was a Talmud of Shmuel, would you mind please sending us some of the calorium that you got from Mar Shmuel? Actually, Mar Ukva was really the Av Bezdin in Shmuel's Bezdin. That's how close he was to him. So Mar Ukva sent him back a message. Okay, this is a pretty embarrassing situation. I'm going to send you some, because if I don't send you some, you're going to say I'm making up excuses because I don't want to share it, okay? So I'm sending you some. But now that I'm sending you some, I want you to know that Shmuel himself did not think that calorium was the solution, because I don't want you to think, lo te metzar ayin anayin, I don't want you to think that I'm being a little bit stingy on this stuff. But the truth is that Shmuel said, tova tipat sonin, shacharit rechitzat yadayim v'raglayim b'chamin arvit, miko kilurin shebaolam. The best thing that you can do for your eyes is keep clean. That's the best thing you can do. Wash with some good, clean, cold water in the morning. Use that water in your eyes. Make sure that your hands and feet are cleaned off in hot water before you go to sleep. That's better than any type of kilorin. So I'm sending that message together with the medicine. Tanya Nami Achi, Amr Rabbi Muna, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda, Tova Tipat Sonen Shacharit, Rechitzat Yadayim V'Raglayim Aravit, Bechamim, doesn't say here, but it was said there, and Miko Kilorin Shebaolam. Another thing that Ramona also said is Yad La'ayin, he's got a whole list of things that you have to be very careful not to touch on your body before you wash your hands in the morning. Now, we're going to see that before washing your hands in the morning over here means before washing your hands three times in order to take off the Ruach Ra'ah, which is Shaira, which we're going to be talking about tomorrow. So therefore, if you touch your hand to your eye before washing, what in Yiddish they call Negelwasser, before washing, you would have been better off cutting off that hand because it's going to cause you such illness. If you put that finger in your nose, baby, you should have cut off the hand better. Putting a hand without negavasa into your mouth, oh, Lord help us, cut off the hand. Putting a hand into your ear, cut off the hand before you stick it into the ear. A hand that is touching a puncture for a bloodletting or for a blood test, that is still not completely healed. Disaster. Cut off that hand. A hand that touches its penis before it's cleaned with his... Actually, it's about locus, whether this is real. Rashi says this may just be a takeoff on the sugya in Nida that we had, which is that any hand that touches his penis because of the possibility of leading to masturbation, so it should be cut off. So Rashi says maybe utilizing that word tikatzeitz is sort of a play on the sugya, but halakha lamaisa, you have to be careful not to touch any body orifices before washing your negavasu in the morning, and therefore it makes perfectly good sense to say yad la'amat tikatzeitz as part of these things. Yad l'pi tabat tikatzeitz. Now this means that bichlal, having any contact with the anus is problematic because you may actually transfer bacteria to your mouth or to your eyes and not properly wash your hands. Because of that, this is not only in the morning, this is any time. And furthermore, a yad legit touching a barrel of beer before you wash negavasar should be tikatzeitz because you infect all of these things with the kayach of the ruach ra that we'll talk about tomorrow when we get into more of the details of how to remove this. And so I leave you here with a wonderful Rosh Chodesh of only ruach tova, besurot tovot, the beginnings of all kinds of lovely things in this new month, a month of Geula Bezrat Hashem, and we'll see you in the morning, I hope, if we're Zochet.